Hi everyone, I'm Todd Fisher, the host of the Cult Following podcast. Cult Following is a podcast that studies the personalities and common traits of cult leaders and their followers. Get the real story behind these infamous and oftentimes tragic cults from a new perspective, through exhaustive research and from interviews with people that were there. Available anywhere you listen to podcasts. Life is a quest for logic and reason. It is a quest to find balance between science and faith. Life is a quest for knowledge and understanding. But most importantly, it's a quest for personal discovery. Whatever your quest, knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom. Welcome to Quest. Hi everyone, I'm your host, Todd Fisher. I'm the founder of Metatomics, and I'm on a never-ending quest for knowledge. A quest is a search for something, and this podcast will show you how we know what we know through interviews with people that have incredible stories of dedication and perseverance. To me, curiosity is part of what makes us human, and there's still so much we don't know. I believe there's joy in discovery. It's what drives us. It's our quest. And with that, welcome to Season 4 of the Quest Podcast. I hope you enjoy this next interview. Hi, Britt. Welcome back to the Quest Podcast.
How you doing, Todd? Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, on this special Halloween episode.
Yes. Let's get into All Hallows Eve.
Yeah. You know, I was looking at my calendar and I was like, oh man, I've got an episode that comes out on Halloween. What can I do? You know, it's new for me to have one that comes out then. So I thought, I'll reach out to Britt because we don't talk about ghosts enough on her podcast, No Earthly Explanation. So we can talk about them on mine and get into it because it's a field that you're really into that we don't give enough lip service to in your own show because we're always talking about Roswell or Bigfoot or something else on No Earthly Explanation, it seems like. And we never really circle back to ghosts, which I know is a big thing for you. So first off, just for the listeners, tell everyone about your interest in ghosts, what you do kind of as your own type of ghost hunter, and then we'll get into some of your adventures.
I've been into paranormal investigating on the ghost front since, gosh, I was a little kid. I had my own experience. And then when I was like 15, I formed my own paranormal group. And then I really
did it have a name?
No.
You didn't name your paranormal group?
No, we didn't. Not at that point. I mean, when I got older and I formed one with my brother, we were, and we still are, WTF Paranormal. But, but at that time, no, it was more or less, at that time they were like, oh, is it just a hobby? And we're like, no, like we really have an interest into it. And because I worked in film and television, we would sit around on the back lots and talk about ghost stories or things that we saw or may have not seen and we didn't know. And then we're like, what if we just got together and started investigating it? And I was like, yeah, let's do that. You know, and then that happened for a couple of years and
when we talked about this before, you know, on one of your previous interviews on mine, Dale, was your first ghost experience, was that in Colorado?
It was.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I was talking about my Stanley Hotel stories, I think, during that, which we can talk about again on this episode if we want. But can you tell everyone who didn't hear it the first time, what was your experience in Colorado?
So we had what was called like a garden level basement in Colorado. So I know, you know, out west and up north, everybody knows what a basement is. Of course, people in Florida are like, what's a basement? Living in a dungeon. but it was like half underground, but it had, you know, these windows that had like, you mostly came right to the dirt. So they were, you know, right at the ground level. And then we had a deck that was right above it. And I was 4 years old and I was playing on my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle table, making pizzas because I was a kid. And my sisters ran upstairs to grab something. And I kind of heard this thump on a window and I looked up and from the playroom into the, like the living area of the basement to that window, I saw what looked like a full blown Native American crouched down in the window, looking back at me. You know, the left side of his head was partially shaved. He had like really coal black hair, like almost like a mohawk towards the center. I mean, I made such detail of him. He had these really cool beads on his arm. He had like a like these feathers on the left side of his head where the half shaved was. But the thing that I remembered most was the way he looked at me. His eyes were like, oh my God, like they've seen me. And I remember telling this story as I got older and my brother's like, oh, it's probably one of the wild men. Cause we live so high in the Rockies in Estes Park that we were known for having what were called wild men. And these were men that just lived off the land. They like would skin their animals and wear that stuff and lived in their own kind of makeshift cave homes. But this was not that. This was a full blown. And I remember I screamed so tightly and like so frightened because I'd never seen anything like that. And when I opened my eyes, it was gone. It was like gone. And then that kind of just spiraled my like, I was so open after that. Like there's no way that anybody could tell me that I didn't see what I saw.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it the Stanley Hotel, I had to go visit. I was in that area and I had to go see the Stanley Hotel and I took pictures in the Stanley Hotel. And now I've been a professional photographer my entire life, right? Like I totally understand, you know, what can happen if there's a speck of dust on a lens. Yeah. I understand how lighting works. I know how reflections work. I can pretty much figure out if I have any kind of technical issue shooting pictures on a DSLR and what might happen. So as I was taking pictures, down the hallways, I would kept getting these green footprints in the carpet, these glowing green footprints in the carpet. So I would look around, I'd look at the ceilings and the lights in the ceilings of the hallway. I would look where the light was coming from behind me. I'd check my optics, same thing. And it didn't matter where I moved or what angle I went to, the footsteps never moved. They never changed their position. Right. So I'd go to the spot on the carpet where I thought they were. And I thought, well, maybe the hotel's fucking with us and trying to perpetuate this idea that it's haunted and they've done something to the carpet now. In fact, even when you zoom in on these kind of these ghost footprints, you can tell they're not really in the carpet, that they're just sort of above the carpet, you know, and they're hazy. Yeah. Really fascinating all the way down the hallway. And then in the suite where Stephen King had his experiences and had basically was writing The Shining because of that. I couldn't go in the suite. Someone was occupying it, but I went to the door of the suite and there's actually several doors right next to each other because there's like adjoining rooms that connect to the suite. And I photographed the doorway so I could tell everyone, hey, I was here. I was at the spot, you know, where Stephen King was at.
Yeah.
And I didn't notice it at the time, but later on, a friend of mine was looking at the pictures and said, did you notice the face in the door? And I was like, what? And so I blew the pictures up and on one of the doors to the left, so it was like a flat door and then two doors, you know, kind of facing each other. None of them were next to each other. They were all sort of, they were facing each other, but, you know, not all facing me.
Yeah.
But one of the doors, when I looked at the glare on the door, there was a face and that wasn't mine. No one else was with me. So it was definitely a weird, weird situation. And to this day, I can't figure out what happened in those pictures. But there's one other thing that happened too. So we made sure that we stayed in the historical part of the hotel, not any of the expansions. There's people like stay in the expansion rooms and they have activity and they're like, you know.
Yeah.
But so I'm never really sure. In fact, the famous Ghost Hunters episode was the one where the glass broke.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that. You know,
I do.
Jason's glass broke, but he turned off the camera at the time the glass broke, which was like the beginning of the huge scandal about whether or not
you know,
the Ghost Hunters were fabricating stuff.
Right.
But they were staying in one of the annex parts of the hotel. They weren't even in the historical rooms, right?
Mm-mm.
So I'm in a historical room. So I have this little clip of video footage. I don't know if I've ever showed this to you or not, but when I tried to open the window in the room and the freaking window wouldn't open. It was like it was swelled shut. So I was like, all right, it's an old hotel. I guess I can't open the window in it. So I leave for the day and I go do some things. I come back, the window's open. I was like, well, that's the weirdest thing is the window's open right now. So I put the window back down and it's working fine. And I think, well, it's just swelling up, you know, something's happening with the environment. And And I leave and I come back, it's open again. And I'm like, what is going on here? So I was really frustrated about why this window would open when I would leave. But if I wanted to open on my own, I couldn't. So I must set my camera up for time lapse. So I left for the day, go do my stuff. And I come back and that window's open. But I go back and look at the video footage. And not only had the window opened on its own, it closed on its own and it reopened on its own at different points. And at one point, when the window closed, you see the bed in front of the camera go like this, like pressed down, like someone had been
What?
sitting on the bed. Yeah, so you see the bed just bend in with the camera behind it, nothing touching it. So not only would did the window
Oh
open and close
my.
multiple times, but you see the cushion, you see the bed move. So
Oh my God. No, you've never sent that to
yeah,
me. I want to see it.
amazing. It's amazing. There's also some curtain movement and stuff too, which could be other things, but the bed is really odd.
Yeah, that's not
And
air conditioning, I can tell you that.
yeah. So that was crazy. I've always
Wow,
kept
that's
an open
awesome.
mind with things like this. I've never really had like much of a personal experience with things. I'll tell you another story though, while we're on stories, and then we'll move on to something from you. But I had a friend who trained like canines for the police force and for the military, things like that. So they could sniff out where people were, they would sniff out drugs, they would sniff out body parts. He trained them to do all kinds of stuff. And this guy lived in Henryville, Indiana. And Henryville, Indiana is known for two things. It's known for the most reported UFO sightings in Indiana and the most reported ghost sightings in Indiana. It's a completely messed up town. And they had like they had they the state police had cracked down on like all of the satanic cults that were there, and like oh, I mean, it's just anything weird and macabre that went on was going on in Henryville. So this is where this guy lived, and he trained his dog. So he wanted me to document how he trained his canines.
Okay.
So I went over with my video cameras, and he showed me what it was. And he said the way a dog's nose works is it's like you're walking around sprinkling baby powder behind you, right? It's like whatever comes off your body, they can smell.
Right.
So he demonstrated to me how a dog can take like a handkerchief you had in your pocket, and they can smell it, and then they'll go find you. So if you're lost, if you're a little kid and you're lost, they can smell the last known thing that you had, and then it will go right to you, because from the point of where you drop that and where you're lost, there's all this trail of this, baby powder scent that's behind
Yeah.
you. So that's what they do. So I watched them train these dogs, and it was incredible. And these dogs were so well trained. Not only could they really find anything that you planted, but they would listen to your commands. They would jump in front of a car, at his command. Highly trained dogs. Really impressive to see this done. But he bought a house in Henryville that was kind of notoriously a haunted home. In fact, my friend Lonnie bought this home from a guy who was living in his driveway because he was afraid to be in the house anymore. This is how
Oh,
bad this house was.
that's, I mean, why not? That sounds like
So
paradise. Okay.
he buys this house at a steal, and he has the dogs on the property. So he tells me, he goes, oh, by the way, it's really funny. He's like, you want to hear something weird? He says these highly trained dogs I breed, he said they won't go upstairs in my house. He said is whatever I do, I command them, they won't go up the stairs. They sit at the bottom of the stairs and yelp. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, I got to see this. So he shows me his house, and he tells me about all the stuff that happened in the house before he actually was able to move in. He said he
Oh.
would come home and all the kitchen cabinets would be open,
Oh my
or the drawers
gosh.
would be pulled out. And he thought maybe the old owner had the keys and was like messing with them,
Right. Yeah.
All he heard from neighbors was that there had been a fire. Some people had died in the house. It had been, remodeled. And, this is the house he was living in now. So I watched these dogs who would do anything for him, any command they would do for him, would sit at the bottom of those stairs and yelp. They would not go upstairs. So when I went upstairs in his house,
Oh.
he told me there was activity upstairs. And he said the activity would be things like there would be shelves on the wall, and the trinkets on the shelves would move from one shelf to another shelf. He said he would never see them move, but he would go up there and things would be moved around, or the bed would be made and the bed would be unmade. He said he would never see it get unmade, but it would be unmade when he would come back up. So he said it was stuff like that. But when I went up there into the upstairs, this room the dogs would never go to, the air pressure was different and weird. It was like nothing I'd ever really experienced. It wasn't that it was stuffy. And it wasn't like it was just some damp, closed off room. It wasn't that it was upstairs and it was just more humid or hot because of the way the old house was. It was like an air pressure that was really weird that I'd never really experienced. And while I was up there, it felt like someone put an ice cube on the back of my neck.
Oh,
very weird experience in that room. And that's the most personal experience I've ever had with anything. I've never really like seen a ghost in front of me. I've never really seen any activity. I've never really heard anything. But that in that upstairs was the only time I ever really maybe had anything close to like a personal experience.
Ugh.
So, yeah.
If animals are sensing something and they're like, we're not going up there, that's like the biggest sign ever of like, stay away. He should have just sold the house. Been like, yep, I'm on. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, that was the oddest thing. And I'll give you one more footnote about those dogs. Anyone who wants to get away from canines that are after you, be a smoker or wear a lot of cologne. Because if you're a smoker or you wear cologne, it kills their senses temporarily.
Really?
So any criminals out there listening, if you need to get away from a dog that's chasing you, just start dousing yourself with cologne and you're going to get away scot-free.
Oh my God. Take I'm notes out now, everybody. Like, rewind and take the notes.
That's right. I'm giving out secrets the police don't want you to know. Oh man. So yeah,
today that's the quest. Only thing.
I was like, really? There's no way to get away from these? Oh yeah, there is. You know, smokers, they it kills the dogs. So
how funny.
What's your best ghost story? What's been the best place you've ever gone to? What's been what you've seen that's just really scared you, struck you as evidence, or you know, whatever it might be?
Oh man, that's a good question. I helped out a lot in, this was years and years ago. I had friends of mine that, ran the paranormal investigation, the nighttime one, like after midnight, with equipment at the hospital up there, which isn't the original hospital, but it's now the hospital that people go to. And I did have some really odd accounts up there. And then I remember one in particular, this one's kind of a comedic one because, you know, you see things when you investigate and you kind of get used to seeing things, but you are more prepared when you see them, like when you're in the motion of like, okay, I have my equipment, I'm ready. And you kind of like go, okay, I know something's going to happen. So you start visually and mentally getting prepared for it. But we had settled for the night. The group that had purchased to be a part of the program were there. And I was there teaching how to use dowsing rods, on a paranormal investigation, that night. And then we wrapped up and I think it was like 2:30 in the morning or something like that. And we were talking in the front lobby portion of the hospital. And if anyone's been to St. Augustine, they know what I'm talking about. You kind of like walk in, there's a small area with a little wooden gate that you open up and the cashier's right dead in front of you. And then there's like two chairs there. And it's like the grieving room where you'd go and say your goodbyes. And then there's like the office that was the doctor's office. And then you head into the rest of the doctors or the rest of the facility. But anyway, so we were sitting there talking. I was kind of standing towards the front door and I got out of my roller chair and I was kind of just holding onto it, rolling it back and forth. And I was talking to my friends and we were closing up and she said something to me and I don't remember exactly what she said, but I just nonchalantly looked up towards the doctor's office and I see this tall figure with a top hat on as if he was getting ready to leave, like 1800s period clothing.
Wow.
With a long coat, very long, long black coat with like, I saw the whole silhouette of this being in the doorway. And because my senses were turned off and we were laughing and I just wasn't there. Oh my God, it scared me half to death. And I literally chucked the chair towards the doorway. Like it was going to protect me from this entity. And everybody started laughing because I literally took that chair in pure fright and just like chucked it. And I never in my life have ever reacted like that before, but because my senses were turned off, I wasn't prepared for it. And it like, it caught me off guard, but it was a menacing, kind of, you know, finger in the doorway. But I mean, honestly, I've done this for so long that there's like so many times I've either been caught off guard seeing something or, you know, I've come to learn over a good portion of my life that I have gifts that I never really utilized. And I don't talk about it much because I'm always like, people are going to think she's crazy, you know, but it's like, you know, I do feel a lot when I walk into a building and in my head, I see like movies playing out. And I think it's most of it now, what I've figured out, is that it's kind of like I'm seeing what happened in that building at that time. So like looking at the past, but it plays out in my head so I can kind of depict what was going on, when things were happening. But it used to startle me because I would get these flashes when I'd be in buildings and it would scare me because I didn't know if it was being put in there from a spirit or an entity, or if it was actually an ability of my own. So it's just weird because that catches you off guard too. And I've seen some pretty messed up stuff.
I actually have heard a similar story to that. It's been probably 10 years ago at this point. I had a management group that I was running, and we were wanting to, we had, so A&E had a show called Psychic Kids. I don't know if you remember that show or not.
I loved that show. Yes.
And Bryson Canoose was one of the psychic kids, and his mom was trying to get him management. So we were considering it, maybe doing something with Bryson, because Bryson at that point was nearly 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, he was wanting to like maybe do other stuff outside of Psychic Kid.
Yeah.
But that was certainly part of his brand. So I wasn't sure on it, you know, because a lot of people have, you know, momagers and you never really know what's happening. And his mom was kind of an amateur paranormal enthusiast. So, you know, you got to test the waters and see what happens. Right. So I said, well, I'll meet you and I'll meet Bryson. And we were, we all met in Columbus, Ohio. And his mom was really nice. And Bryson was a great kid. But I wanted to get to know him. So we were walking around in downtown Columbus. And one of the areas of downtown Columbus, there was an old prison. The prison had been torn down. They built apartments on the site. The only part of the prison that was left was the entranceway, was this beautiful ornate entranceway of the prison. So they left kind of these columns where you would enter the prison, and there was nothing behind it but a parking lot. So all the residents of the apartment complex would park in this area behind where the entrance was, and then all the new apartments were built over the grounds of the prison. So I said, Bryson, explain to me kind of your process. You know, how are you communicating with people? And he said, well, he's like, at the time we're walking down the sidewalk toward this old prison. And he says, well, it's kind of like us walking down the sidewalk right now. You know, people walk past you as you go by, and some of them make eye contact with you, and some of them might say hi. He said, it's kind of the same in my world. He said, a spirit will go past me. And he said, sometimes they don't even see me. And then some of them do, and some will come up to me, but they don't know how to communicate with me. And some will come up to me and they'll have a message that they can get to me.
Mm-hmm.
He said, that's really the way it works. And he said, he told me a story about when he was a kid, that the weird thing about Bryson, and I'm not even sure if A&E addressed this or not, but they wanted to kick him out of school. They wanted to make him a ward of the state. They wanted to put him in institutions because he couldn't keep his attention in elementary school and middle school because he kept getting bombarded by spirits wanting to like communicate with him. So he was having these conversations and being agitated, and the school was like, something's got to be done here. And they threatened his mom, Judy, with taking him away. And they wanted to basically institutionalize him. And then Chip Coffee came forward. You remember Chip?
I do. Yeah.
And Chip came forward and actually started giving Judy advice about, this may be what your son has. And then they started to develop his abilities. So that was all kind of pre A&E Psychic Kids when he was little Bryson. So when Bryson goes into the parking lot where this prison was, he would walk around the parking lot and like look at things and like acknowledge things or nod to people or maybe have like a few words he'll say. It was always kind of private. And of course, I didn't know if this was real, if this was a show. All I'm going by is what he was telling me. And he would tell me how he would either be told what the area looked like, or he would maybe get a mental picture of it. It was like you. He didn't really know where it was coming from. Mm-hmm. But he told me where the different areas of the prison were. He told me that the area where the parking lot was graves, where they would, when they would kill people or people would die in the prison, they buried them in paupers' graves.
Oh, wow.
And when we authenticated it, because that was the purpose of the trip, we wanted to authenticate stuff. He was right. But the rub was him and his mom knew we were coming to Columbus, right? So we couldn't really take it as kind of canon for what we were doing because they could have researched it. So what I did, but I was intrigued, right? So this got me so far. So what I did was I said, would you guys mind going to another location that I don't tell you about? And they were like, all right, because I've got to test you, but we have to do this as a different type of like a blind study, basically.
Right,
So
yeah.
I took them into Kentucky to the site of the Beverly Hills Supper Club fire, which at the time was the worst nightclub fire in the history of the country. So this happened in the mid to late 70s, and
Oh boy.
it was this beautiful old kind of nightclub that was built on top of a hill, and it overlooked the Ohio River, and you'd see Cincinnati from the Kentucky side. And there was a mystery behind how the fire started, but a lot of people lost their lives because the building was very old. It wasn't up to code. The doors opened inward instead of outward. There were
Oh,
toxic
yeah.
chemicals in the cushions, and the curtains weren't flame retardant. Like anything that could have gone wrong in the situation
Yeah.
did. And
Oh, jeez.
so this nightclub fire happened, and all these people got burned up in there. So I took Bryson to the site, and I took him up to the top of the hill. Nothing's ever been developed on it. There's still remains of the building up there. There are some little shrines people have put up. We steered him away from all that stuff. We gave him no information on the site. He had no idea where we were going there. And as he walked around that place, and we're talking an area where there's sapling trees grown up. It's really non-navigable. There's some, areas where you see like the remains of the bathrooms and like some spiral staircases that are rusted hulks, some things like that. As we walked around there, he told me everything, the whole layout of the building, the whole thing,
Wow.
as he was communicating with people on site. And we're videotaping this. This was all being videotaped. Unlike the prison, we're videotaping this whole situation. He's mic'd. We hear everything he's saying. Even when he walked off and he's having conversations, we could hear it. Our audio crew could hear what he was saying. He's talking to
Wow.
people who were trying to escape out bathroom windows, people that were on the ground with dead bodies on top of them, all telling him the story about what went on in this place. And he had to take a lot of breaks and step out of the site where the fire happened and go into the kind of the old parking lot area just to recompose because he was being hit with so much so fast. It was really like really wearing him down.
Yeah.
But what he was able to tell us about how the layout of the building was and the people that he was talking to was incredible. I was immediately a believer at that point because there was no way he knew where we were going. His mom didn't either. And what's really weird about that whole situation is that he talked about an area. He went right to the part in the on the grounds where all the electrical was, where they believe that where the fire started. And he said that he had a vision of the owners of the building having an argument, and one of the owners coming in earlier that day, fiddling with something in the wall where the fire started. And there was a theory in town in Covington, Kentucky, that because there had been a dispute between the owners, that maybe one of them had intentionally set the fire. And there's no way Bryson could have ever known that, ever in a million years. Like it was incredible the amount of data he was able to pull. And it made me a believer. Side note to this story, my mom went to the Beverly Hills Supper Club the day before it burned down. She did. So she has a program book from the Beverly Hills Supper Club that's literally like one of the last program books ever. John Davidson, the performer John Davidson,
Yeah.
was performing there. Him and his band were there performing. There were like three different clubs, like a cabaret room where there was a singer, and a room where there'd be like a stand-up comedian, and another room for a band or something. And
Yeah.
people would come up and buy tickets for those. And John Davidson lost a lot of his band members in that fire. And John Davidson barely made it out himself. He escaped out a window in his dressing room. But when the fire went up,
Oh my God.
curtains went up. People were passing out from all the toxic fumes from the chairs. And if you go back and you look, and if anyone wants to do a Google search, you can see all of the press photos, a lot of the photos that were taken after it. And the bodies were piled up, 10 high at the doors because no one could get out the doors because they wouldn't push outward. So they were
Oh
all
my
just,
God.
everyone was just stuck in there, dying tragically.
That's horrible. Yeah, that's a
So,
very tragic. Horrible way to die.
My mom woke up the day at, like, basically she had gone on like a, you know, Wednesday night or, you know, like whenever, Wednesday night and Thursday night, I think was like the next performance. And that's when it happened. Like that Thursday night was open. So on Friday morning, the newspaper comes and my mom just immediately starts crying because she's like, oh my God. Like if she'd have bought tickets one day later, she might have been
Oh
dead. She would
my
have just
God.
bought
She
the
would have
next
just.
night's performance. It would have been over.
Oh my gosh. That's really like crazy to think that just one day like that. You know what I mean? Like when you think of it that way, but geez Louise.
Yeah, just thinking about buying the next night's performance could have been the end, you
The
know?
end of it. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah,
Jeez.
so like you talk about these abilities, and it really reminds me of what Bryson, how he would explain it to me.
Yeah.
But I don't know, you know, if he was really getting the data about this was the room they were in, or this room where it was at, or how the mental picture came together. That's a mystery to me. It's really interesting though how those scenes can be assembled from
Right.
someone who does have some psychic abilities.
Well, the cool thing that I like is it always so like when I meet a psychic or I've never been read. I don't let psychics read me. I don't know why. I just never have. But whenever I have to meet a psychic or like as you know, sometimes I help create series or shows and I have to meet a psychic, I'm always very skeptical like at first. So I will always be like, you know, they need to have like a cold test in some way towards somebody because a cold read where they couldn't have time to look this person up, they have no access to any kind of personal information, and like, you better give me the goods. So, you know, I like the fact that you were like, eh, they could have found this online. Because that's a lot of stuff that I always go, online services are so accessible now with historical facts that, I mean, if you are given enough time to know the location, you could know everything. And I'd be like, oh my God, there's no way that that person, but it's like, yeah, they could have. Tell me something I don't know, you know? So I love that you actually took him to a different location and then he was able to call. That's when it gets me. 'Cause it's like, no, we're doing it cold turkey. You're not going to know where we're going, you know? And I love too, in some cases I've had others that have blindfolded the mediums when they get into a car. And they didn't talk about a location. There was no build up. It was kind of like, listen, we're going to do a cold read with you and you just need to be ready. And they're like, okay, you know, and a lot of that is meditation preparation and clearing of the mind to be able to open themselves up to accept whatever comes their way. And I have like one really good friend that's a psychic medium and I trust her. She gets me every once in a while. She will be talking to me and she will just throw out something that I'm like, okay, there's no freaking way you could know that. Like, there's no way. Who's talking to you right now? Like, it's that good. Like, because there's just certain things I just don't say, even though she's my friend. Just because I'm just like, if I tell you too much, you could throw something at me just to get me. But she's legit. She is legit. So it's just funny.
And you know, it's weird because at the Beverly Hills Supper Club, they did finally put a historical marker on the road when you look there. So we had his mom at the bottom of the hill, but we didn't show Bryson the historical marker. His mom did get to see it when she was down there. But Bryson had no communications. He couldn't talk to her. He had no phone. It was just all him going around that site, and it was really pretty incredible. And what we wanted to do was our idea was, and we never wound up handling Bryson. We never wound up doing a show with him. But what we wanted to do was we wanted to take him around to attractions all over the country. You know, just kind of this 18-year-old kid getting his independence, going to these locations and documenting it. But it never really worked out. We could do that, but that was really sort of a test run of doing that. It was really neat. And it's weird because
I
not a
love
lot of
that.
it's crazy because you don't see the Beverly Hills Supper Club covered on ghost hunting shows. It's
No.
just one of those things that people have forgotten about. But even to this day, it's still in the top three of worst nightclub fires. You should, when you're done with the with this
I'm gonna
today,
look
you
it
ought to
up.
jump on, you should jump on Wikipedia and read the story about it because it's such a fascinating such a fascinating site and a story. And it actually still has a little visual appeal because there are still things there.
That's really cool. I'm gonna look it up when we're off. But you know, it reminds me of something like the thing that really frustrates me. So for me personally, if I'm invited to go out like on an investigation, I don't look anything up because I always feel like I want it to be genuine. Like if I'm on an investigation, I want to see what comes to me, what doesn't come to me, what we pick up on, or even an audio. Like even if you don't have any abilities and you're doing an EVP recording, if you kind of already know some history or some facts or some names, then automatically what our brain does, because this is where our brain kicks in, and subconsciously we're not recognizing that we're doing this. But if a voice comes through the EVP and it is saying something audible, we immediately place it with something we think it's saying based off of where we are. Like, it's an automatic, like, we just put in words.
Right.
So for me, I'm like, I'd really rather not know anything about it so that I can listen to a genuine EVP recording and pick up and analyze it accurately and hear right. what it's saying without being like, it said Deborah. Well, that's convenient. A Deborah died in this room. You know, like, I just
right.
like it's something like that. But then I also hate the fact that there are thousands upon thousands of truly incredible true blue haunted locations across America. I mean, even thousands if you go out of the country. But what fascinates me is all the TV shows repeatedly do the same locations over and over and over again, to the point to where you can almost be like, well, I know what they're going to find in there. They're going to find that one Salem guy who died and killed everybody in that cell, you know, like,
right.
Because you've seen them done over and over again. And it's like, why don't we mix it up truly and go to a brand new location that has never been reported on and is truly haunted? Like, I worked on a location as an investigator. I don't go in one night and say I have all the answers, because that's not a real true investigation. If you're really going to be a real investigator in the field, you have to study the location. You're not going to get your answers on night one. You have right. to be there for a long period of time. And so that's a study that a lot of people just don't do. But I worked on a location for 3 months and ended up being a very demonic, possessed location. And really needed to be exercised, like, hardcore. Mm. We had manifestations. We had manifestation of flies that would come and go, like big groups of just dark mass flies forming something. I have a photograph of what looks like a child, but it's not a child. Like, I have that to date. And, you know, it's the study I had to do for a long period of time. And it became watching the person that was experiencing it actually have physical ailments from the possession of the building. But those are the things, the off the road tracks that I love going to, because I feel they have the true meat to what you're investigating, and you've got to give it that time. And it frustrates me that these shows go in, they're like, well, 2 a.m. in the morning, time to wrap up. We didn't catch anything. You were there for like 5 hours with an entire film crew. Like,
yeah. I'd like to see crossover stuff then too. Like, obviously, you know about my cult following podcast, right?
Yes. So,
you know,
yes.
Which, of course, the UFO cults one just aired. Yep. I just put it out, which was a crossover we did for No Earthly Explanation, and we did it for mine. So that just came out last week. But, you know, I'd like to see some crossover stuff, because whenever there have yeah. been destructive cults that have, you know, given us death in their members, go, like, you don't see ghost hunters going to those sites. You don't see Mm-mm. Waco being looked at, you know?
Oh, Waco.
You don't see what happened with the Branch Davidians. No one's looking to see if there are ghosts from those people, if there's paranormal activity that happens in these places. And there's a lot of those, a lot of destructive cults that have locations that you can still go to that have buildings standing or buildings that are burned down. Mm-hmm. You know, things like Sharon Tate's house with the Manson crimes, that's gone. They tore that down. Right. But no one really knows if there's activity still on the site. You know, no right. one goes to what's built there now. I mean, maybe we shouldn't. You know, it wouldn't really make much sense, because you're in a brand new house or a garage or whatever they put there.
Yeah.
But well, no one's bothered to ask if, you know, the owners have activity there.
Yeah, I think it would just depend. Like, because... if you look at some, like, the cults, they did it out in the middle, in some cases, like in tents, like in the middle of, you know, nowhere, in a sense. And that's just on ground. So that type of traumatic energy, I would think, would resonate still in that area. So even like in Sharon Tate's house, even if the house is no longer present, the ground in which all of this transpired is still withholding all that negative energy, you yeah. know? I mean, that's even like the Black Dahlia house that's out there too. I mean, that is still there. You could go and investigate that. That is still there.
I mean, Ghost Hunters International shouldn't have gone to stupid castles in Ireland. They should have gone to where Jonestown was, where everyone drank yeah. the Kool-Aid. Like, let's walk around there. I want to see what's yeah. going on there, because someone is still on site, you know?
You could do like a cult paranormal. Like, literally.
That's what it needs to
just
be.
Doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, it needs to be cult parent there. That means you've got a built-in name for a show right there, you
You do.
know?
Well, think about Waco. I mean, they had that bus that they did half bury underground. That was like an in and out entrance, but they did have some that died in there. So it's like even in Waco, I think that building's still standing, actually. I think. But
There's a
all of those.
memorial at Waco. Only the foundations of the building are there, and the pool is
Oh, okay.
there.
So that's
You know,
gone. Okay.
there's like a few things there, but the buildings were demolished, but you can still go and
Yeah.
see the profile of where things were, you know? And you know, I know that ghost hunters have tried to do the World Trade Center, but they won't. City of New York doesn't
Oh.
allow it. They don't. They're like, no, we're not gonna sell this, you know, sell out to letting ghost hunters walk around here. But
Yeah.
it begs the question, you know. And again, it's not like cults, but it's like when you have a fire in a building like that, you know, or any type of big situation that might have caused a lot of loss of life, you know, those are interesting locations too. So it's weird. It is
Yeah.
weird that the world of the paranormal for television is so inbred that it is literally the same locations. If anyone
Oh.
goes to a Pennsylvania penitentiary again, I'm going to freaking just go nuts, you know, like I don't care. Waverly Hills Sanitarium again? Come on.
My God, I know it's like literally clockwork. It's the same locations. And look, I love out west because I was born in Tucson, Arizona. And Tombstone and all of that. It's wonderful. And the history there, it's an active spot for hauntings. It just is. And it makes sense being the history that it has. But how many ghost teams have gone there and done the same thing and dressed up like cowboys and played poker at the table to see if it energized the room, you know? And it's like, you know, I have my own theories on some aspects of it. So on some aspects of it, I don't necessarily think that these dead guys are still walking around. I think in some of these locations, we're kind of stuck in a time bending situation where the past and present are overlapping, and we're both having a paranormal experience. And there's been documented journals from people that have written about from that time in their home, lights turning on, conversations they're hearing, and all this, that, and the other. And when you look at the timestamps and you think about it, you're like, I wonder if a team was in the house on such and such a date. And it would have lapped into the same time that these people were hearing odd voices in their house that they were trying to locate, and they wrote about it in their journal. So it's fascinating to me when you have occurrences like that, because it's just you just don't know. But I'm really tired of seeing the same places over and over again. Like
Yeah.
I there is so many, and then it's funny, like somebody will randomly be like, Brittany, do you know this location in like Vermont? And they'll give me like a random name. I'm like, no, because honestly, there's thousands of haunted locations. And I'm not going to sit here and act like I know them all because you don't. You can't keep up with them. Even since
Yeah.
COVID, more locations have come to light on being haunted because people were forced to be enclosed in their location or in their home. And now
Right.
they're like, I had no idea my house was so freaking haunted and I'm stuck here.
Right. Also, I think, you know, thinking outside the box for future locations for people to go to, when you think about things like, you know, where there were train crashes, there's a lot of places
Yeah.
where there were train derailments and a lot of loss of life. There were places where there were natural disasters. You know, no one's going to Thailand to see where the tsunami hit and so many people died. Like, there's so many spots where there were earthquakes that a lot of people lost their lives, where buildings were collapsed on people and his interstates fell apart. Like, there's a lot of areas where you can go to that were the scenes of a lot of tragedy that are not only interesting to say, you know, the train line behind me, you know, in 1972, there was a derailment that killed, you know, 35 people, and discuss the history of what happened on that site. That's an interesting thing because you get to get a little dose of history and a dose of there was a lot of death here. You know, it wasn't necessarily that people were murdered, but definitely a traumatic incident nonetheless, so that you might not move on from, you
Oh,
know.
absolutely. Well, I
So it
mean,
doesn't.
but that follows through too. Like after the hurricane hit New Orleans, you know, it was so badly flooded that the cemeteries, the bodies were coming out of the ground and floating down the street.
Yeah.
And the mediums were like, the real mediums were saying that they were being bombarded by almost the spirit plane saying, you know, I need to find my body. Like, where's my body? You know, and they're like, we're trying to find your bodies, but it's everywhere. And so you imagine the immediate like disruption of our already a very haunted and eerie town with a really deep history of that type of stuff. And now they've just had this new uproar of bodies coming out of the ground and unrest. And so it's like, no one's touched on that. No one's really investigated that wholeheartedly to find out, is there peace in some of those situations now, or what has happened since then?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that spirits are more active at certain times? Do you think give any credibility to spirits might be more active during Halloween? Are they more active during a full moon? Are they more active at the anniversary of their death? Do you think there's any truth to any of that?
No. My opinion is no. I honestly think that if a place is haunted or the presence of a spirit is there, it's going to be there, whether it's day, night, 3 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't think it really matters because there's so many daytime sightings that people really don't address. Halloween, I think it's a lot of hype for it because of the history of what All Hallows Eve stands for. But I think more people are just more open to the spookiness of it. So in a sense, I think we open our mind, not realizing we're opening up our minds. So I think when we have an account, we're like, it's because it's Halloween and it's a full moon and right. It's Halloween and it's All Hallows, you know, but it's actually not. It's just you've opened up and you're more open because of the nostalgic or, you know, kind of the persona of Halloween and what it is. And so automatically our brains now have been opened without us being aware. And so if we see something, we just lump it into that, you know, like it's the same thing. Like if you're on Halloween, you see a black cat, you're just like, I knew it. There's a witch nearby. You know,
right.
It's something so stupid, but yet 3 days ago you saw that black cat on like the 27th and you're like, stupid black cat, get out of my yard. You know, like,
exactly. Right.
It's just not the same thing. I just think we just see it differently because it's, oh, it's All Hallows Eve, you know, like that's right. Really all it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you have it, folks. We're dispelling that there's any more spirits than normal out on Halloween. But Britt, I know this is kind of this actually went on for a while. We've been doing this episode for a while. It seems short, but we've actually been recording for a bit here. But I wanted to knock out a good Halloween episode for everyone. So I hope the audience enjoyed our stories. I appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely. I have fun. Anytime we can, you know, I kind of look at it like swapping stories around an old campfire, you know, with your friends, like wanting to talk about your old ghost stories or what you think that creak in the night is, or, you know, the floorboards were creaking. What was it? I don't know. Right. Was it grandma?
I know, right? All right. Well, with that, everyone have a happy Halloween. And Britt, I'm sure you and I will do this again on your podcast.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Talking about some more creep stuff.
You want to go ahead and give everyone your social media handles and all that good stuff for those who might be hearing you for the first time?
Yeah, the best way to actually talk to me or interact with me is on my Instagram page at Britt_investigates. And the podcast, like Todd had mentioned earlier, with my counterpart and my partner in crime, Don Schmidt, you can find that on Instagram, Facebook, Spotify, all of that jazz with no earthly explanation. We talk about a lot of fun stuff. That'll be coming back for season 2, beginning of the year. And I am on Facebook, but I'm really horrible about Facebook. So I'll be honest, you won't reach me there. I am really active on my Instagram page to be in touch with everybody. So reach out to me, follow, like, and comment. I'll talk to you.
I want everyone to go to her Instagram and share their best ghost story.
Oh yeah, please do.
Maybe she'll pick one. Yeah, yeah, right. Tag.
Yeah, if you put it like in your stories or in a post, just tag me to it and I'll share it into my stories and I'll write my comments on it. Would love that.
Love it. All right, Britt, you have a good evening. Thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having me. Happy Halloween, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please be sure to rate and review this episode. This podcast is produced by Todd Fisher and Anthony Smith and is distributed by Metacortex Publishing. This podcast is copyright. Any previously trademarked or copyright content is used by permission. Information and opinions stated in this podcast should not be construed as medical advice. Please be sure and visit the official website for Metacortex Publishing at metacortexpublishing.com or find us on social media for other unique content.